Hey, everybody, it's Lisa Lampanelli, the Queen of Maine, and you know what? I got my own podcast. Yeah, does everyone have one? Pretty much, but mine's different because I'm going to help you like I help myself. Get Stuffed with Lisa Lampanelli every week is going to teach you how to have the fabulous life that I have. If you don't listen, you're just stupid and don't want to help yourself, so don't even listen. I don't even want you to. But if you do, if you disobey my orders and listen, you can go to feralaudio.com or download it from iTunes. But again, don't listen. I don't even care.
Hey, Weird Adults. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible has the best audiobook performances, the largest library, and the most exclusive content, and you'll feel something when you listen. Learn more at audible.com/weirdadults, where you can get 30 days free and one free audiobook. It's awesome, and just so you know, I'm right now reading Missoula. I think it's a must read, and it's super easy to digest if you're listening to it on Audible. I'm also highly, extremely beyond above recommending you read or listen to on Audible, So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. If you are of the now, if you are living in the time that we're living, which I hope you are if you're listening to this, if not, please seek medical attention because you are in fact dead. But if you are living, you have to read So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson, and you can get it for free by going to audible.com/weirdadults. This book is such a necessary read because it's so relevant to the times we're living in, and I just think it's awesome. All right, guys, check it out, audible.com/weirdadults. Okay, welcome everyone. I'm here with Allison Rosen. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me back after the last time I was on what I think is probably, I'm just going to go ahead and say, the most depressing episode you've ever released.
It was probably. I'm not going to like
defend. Don't sugarcoat it.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say that it wasn't, but I do think it was very profound and people really responded to it and appreciated you. So if you want to hear a very dark story from Allison about her super cute dog,
yeah,
you can go back to that episode. But life goes on and she's here.
I'm here and I'm in a much better place.
Yes, yes. I think that's great. And just maybe we should do like a quick follow-up. Well, first, Allison Rosen of your podcast, Allison Rosen Is Your New Best Friend, which yes. I've been on. I love to listen to it whenever I take a flight. I'm like, well, who's been on Allison's? Let's see, and download like a few. And my podcast has been on this sort of accidental hiatus. And I think this is our first one back in several months. So, oh, there's my phone. Super professional.
I did not realize I'm your
inaugural
re-entry
yes.
episode.
I'm like, who's the perfect person? And, you know, I'm like, Allison, you're friendly. You're nice. You podcast. You have your own great podcast. I always feel like we're kind of like cousins or something. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm a little nervous about doing it, so maybe you can like show me the ropes again.
Will totally ease you back into the world of podcasting. Although I have to find out why the accidental hiatus.
I just like sometimes will go a few weeks or a week or so without posting one, and then what happened was I recorded a couple and was like, oh, this, I don't like this one, and I don't want this to be the one I go back with. So it just kind of like spiraled out of control into this like non-podcasting lifestyle. Also, I use Periscope every day, and I think that's been like filling my need mm-hmm. to talk to strangers. And so that's part of it. And I'm like, hey, if you really miss my podcast that much, you'll just watch my Periscope. So I didn't feel like so guilty.
Periscope is a very intense experience. I know what you mean, like it fulfilled that need to connect with people.
Yeah.
I've only done it a couple times, but I used to do my show as a Ustream show, which was kind of Periscope before Periscope.
Yeah.
And it really was like hanging out with people.
Yeah, it's an intense level of closeness. Like I have I'm very close to a lot of people now that I wouldn't have known before Periscope. And so are a lot of other people. But I don't know. Do you ever use it?
I've done it a few times. And then I don't know why I didn't stick with it. It's weird how you just choose some social media.
Like Vine, I was like, I can't.
No, I do not have those 6 seconds.
That's not my personality.
I can't do Vine. I like Twitter. I like Instagram. Yeah, I periscoped a few things early on. I don't know why I stopped doing it. I should probably get back. I sort of feel like the Periscope train left and I'm like, I'm stuck back here.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's how I feel about Vine, which I'm like, I will stay right here. You guys can go along.
Honestly, and this is very vain, I think that when I'm like, I'm going to Periscope, okay, I got to go put on makeup. And having to put on makeup makes me not want to do a lot of things. Do you feel any pressure to present a certain,
you know, it's funny image? You bring that up because normally I don't, and I just don't care, and I don't like to wear makeup if it's not for a very specific important reason. And I notice when I'm wearing makeup, I get a lot more viewers. And right? So I'm like, oh, I just have clocked that in my head. Like, okay, I need to, I guess whenever I have my makeup done, I should Periscope more.
I have definitely had that thought before. Anytime that I have my makeup professionally done for a TV appearance, I'm always like, I should make a video or do something. I don't ever do it anymore though, but I know. Always have that. I should take advantage of it.
Yeah, well, you know, Kylie Jenner posts on Instagram every time she has her makeup done, as she said before, on her app, or maybe a preview of her app. I didn't get her app, but I'm curious.
I think, I didn't even know she had an app, but I think the Kardashians wake up and get full makeup done just for selfie purposes. I feel like I read that.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true about Kylie. Maybe she was lying to me wherever I read it. But yeah, she made it seem like that's actually where I got the idea from. I was like, oh, you're right. You should document every time you like look nice. Hmm. And then I had my makeup done. One of my favorite makeup applications that someone had done on me, and I sent a selfie to my mom and she responded, you should take a lot of pictures today. And I was like, oh, my mom's looking out. That's so nice. Weird and complex.
What was this will appeal to your female listeners and hope the men too, what was so great about this particular makeup application?
It was very natural yet very pretty. And I feel like that's the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. I know everyone's like, no makeup, makeup. And they're like bored with it. But it was in between like no makeup, makeup. But it was like a little more than that. Mm-hmm. Which I feel like that's, I don't know. What do you have like a makeup look that you prefer?
I like glamorous, but not so heavy that when you look at me, you're like, oh, makeup.
Yeah.
Like not... You know what I really don't like? There's a certain way of applying eyeshadow that when I see it, I'm like, I just want to vomit at the image of my face.
Wait, I wonder what you're talking about.
Which is dark eyeshadow just on like the outside of my eyes and then something lighter inside. And I feel like it gives me this weird... Because I remember one time, I'm not finishing any sentence. One time I said to a makeup artist, she said, you know, what do you like? And I said, cat eye. But I think what I meant was the kind of 60s like winged eyeliner. Yeah. But instead she may as well have just like put whiskers on me. <It's> like, I'm going to make this very much like a cat eye. So like it's like they had these like dark blotches on the outside and then something light, and it was very high contrast and distracting and not blended well and not natural looking at all.
You know, I have to say I'm guilty of this crime where you do have the outside of your eyelid
but for
is
a lot
dark.
Of people, it doesn't look bad.
I haven't done it since high school, so I'm going to assume that it does look bad now. But yeah, when I learned that technique from like the MAC makeup counter, I felt like a new woman.
It is a very, sorry, I had to adjust. I'm standing up. Not that anyone needed to know that. It is a very MAC sort of paint by numbers type thing, but I think for certain eye shapes it looks fine. I think it looks good. Do we have the same eye shape though? Because we've talked about how we sort of have similar faces.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're sizing each other up.
You're staring intensely at each other's eyes.
You have a good hair length. I kind of want to use it for inspo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have been kind of unhappy with my hair of late. I haven't really found a good haircutting person here. I don't have a regular person. I haven't for years.
Me either. I'm trying someone new. I'll get back to you.
Please do.
Yes, I would love to.
Was this a recommendation from a
friend? It was. So I have high hopes and high expectations. I want to ask you, firstly, I want to follow up with what we talked about on the last time you were here, this tragic story about your dog. But I've been following your life on Instagram and it looks like you have Wendy now.
Yes, we have a new dog.
Do you want to like follow up and talk about? Are you like so happy with Wendy?
Yes.
Do you love her so much?
I love her so much. She's the sweetest and the best, and I love her so much. And we definitely do some things differently than we did with Oliver. So for anyone who, if you haven't gone back and listened to the very sad episode, we had the cutest, sweetest, best dog in the world. And on our honeymoon, my mom was watching him. He was attacked by another dog and went into kidney failure and died. And that's a very short version. There were, at every step of the way, it was more traumatic than it had to be. Like, it's, there was so, I remember when I was on, you saying to me, because you already knew some of the story, but yeah. when I went into detail about it, you were like, this is so much worse than I expected.
Sorry that I said that to you.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, it, so yeah, it was just,
I'm sure that any,
it was awful.
Dog owner, mom or dad will, like, when they just hear you say that, like, any kind of horrible experience with a dog is just,
yeah,
it's like just, you lose a child. And I mean, I don't know, I guess it's not fair to say that, I don't know,
it felt like it, obviously it's, I feel like it's, yeah, I can't say it's the same,
right? We can't,
I'm not trying to say it's the same. It was a big loss for, yeah, for us. And so many, if only I did that, you know, so I felt, I blamed myself so much for so many things that, I don't know, I was talking to someone recently and she was saying, it just sounds like kind of just a constellation of awful, random, accidental things, which maybe is one way of looking at it. I think that when something traumatic happens, you want to think, if I had done this, this, and this differently, it wouldn't have happened. Like,
oh,
to keep yourself
safe. Of course.
So I don't know. There are definite things I would have done differently.
I think that's very common in any tragedy. I think that a lot with different types of things. Like, if only this, you know?
And yeah,
that's an easy way to start looking at things.
Right. Right. So, but anyway, with Wendy, we have her sleeping in our bed, which we both like, but dog trainers have told us we definitely shouldn't be doing that because I guess it gives her a distorted sense of self. It makes her think she's a person. But, you know, and actually for a while, my husband was hand feeding her at dinner.
Oh my gosh. That's what I used to do with my dog.
Really?
Yeah. He's just rotten.
Yeah.
Now.
We just put an end to that. That's now good. I started taking her to obedience classes and she actually did an agility class. And it's crazy how much progress she's made. Cause we had a dog trainer come to the house before. And she had made some progress, but this, I feel like it just, she jumped ahead quite a bit. So she's on her way to becoming a better behaved dog.
Oh, is she a bad girl?
No, and she's not a bad girl. She's very sweet. But she, like, if someone is eating something on the couch, she will be pawing at you and she wants some. Mm. And she just doesn't really understand that there's not really boundaries.
Yeah.
She's like a toddler.
Yeah. It would be really hard for me to have a dog and not let it sleep with me, though. I don't know. Is that something you guys are going to put to an end?
No, I don't think so. Because we're too into it. But with Oliver, he did not sleep in the bed with us.
Oh, interesting.
But I think that's why with her, we let her, because we sort of look, I don't know, we kind of wish that we had let him sleep in the bed, knowing how that we weren't going to have him for that long. That being said, the initial dog trainer that we had with Wendy was like, but he didn't miss out on anything. You just wish it for yourselves.
Right.
But it's like he was, you know, arguably had a better life because he was being treated like a dog and had boundaries.
Right. I was doing
the
right
stuff.
Thing.
Yeah.
I noticed on Instagram that I feel like on your social media the last 24 hours or so, you've mentioned a butter spray several times, and I just want to explore that a little.
I have a pretty unhealthy relationship with I Can't Believe It's Not Butter Spray.
Okay.
Where are you with that?
I am very unfamiliar. I've never tried
really?
It. I'm curious, though.
Okay. I got into it a while ago.
I wonder if we talked about this on the last podcast. I don't know.
I don't think we did.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Feels like new territory. Yeah, I used to be really into it and then I stopped using it for a while because it's the kind of thing where it's like, I think it says one spray is one calorie. But I never use just one spray. I'll just like douse something and then I'm like, okay, so essentially I'm pouring oil on something, so I don't think it's as light as it could be. So I stopped using it for years because I thought
that scared me.
I know. Me too. Sudden person at the window.
No idea what that's about. But I am terrified.
Okay, I'm glad you pointed that out because I'm like, how am I going to talk about butter spray when
there's a person staring head in the window.
But she's right. Gone now.
Wait, what are you putting this on?
I put it on all sorts of things. I put it on pretty much anything. Back in the day when I would eat Lean Cuisine frozen dinners, I would like douse those in it. I have been known to spray it just directly into salsa and then mix that up and eat
it.
I like
we are on very different wavelengths. I'm shocked.
Do you not do weird mixtures?
I do, I think, but only sweet. Like the idea, like I feel like I need like more sweet, but not necessarily more butter.
Right. Well, it's not like you definitely can believe it's not butter. In no way do you think you're eating butter. But it just adds like a sort of creamy, salty, that sounds so gross, flavor. Sometimes I think I could just be sprinkling salt on my food and it wouldn't have the same calories.
Oh, maybe.
Like maybe I should just be doing that. I don't know. It's just a good all around sort
some
of condiment.
Pink sea salt, which is what all the cool girls are into.
Are you into the fancy salts?
I have some sea salt. I think, yeah, I do think it's the pink sea salt that I bought. I don't, again, like salt isn't necessarily the thing that I crave the most, but when I make like I just started making avocado toast because I ate a lot of it in Australia and it was really good, and I've been adding my Chilean crystal salt or whatever to it.
Avocado toast is having a moment, is it not?
It is. It's almost like the moment should be over soon, but possibly it is just beginning. I can't tell.
What is it? Is it just avocado spread on toast?
Yeah.
With
so
salt?
What makes it different than what you probably just think it is if you haven't tried it, it's like usually has either like a lemon or a lime juice, which makes it, it's kind of like American guacamole or something. So it has lemon or lime juice, usually some spices, chili flakes, I've seen like caraway seeds in it and like a little bit of like a mustard flavor. So it doesn't
sounds
just
so good.
It's so good. I hate to be a part of this like movement of Instagrammers or whatever, but it actually is so delicious. And my aunt, who is a nutritionist, who I just saw when I was in Minnesota, was telling me how, cause I'm like, she is always like, what's going on like with your food? And I was telling her, you know, obviously I have sugar cravings all the time. And one thing that she really like reiterated was that you have to add more fats into your diet and that will reduce your sugar cravings. I don't remember the technical explanation because she gets so scientific so fast with like words like triglycerides. And
is she a nutritionist?
She is, yeah. And so she said that like her magic touch right now or whatever her elixir is like high fat, healthy fats, especially in the morning. And that's why I've been trying to make myself avocado toast. And also she said to eat coconut oil in the morning. And I made the mistake of adding the coconut oil to the avocado toast, which was so disgusting.
Yeah,
I had to throw it away. That was a waste of, you know, a $3 avocado.
What do you put the coconut oil in?
I haven't been, after I tasted it on the avocado toast, I was so disgusted that I haven't looked at it since.
Yeah.
But they do, I know there are types of coconut oil that don't have that coconutty taste, so I might have to look into one of those. Mm-hmm. Do you,
were you going to ask what do I think of coconut oil?
Yeah.
I went through a very short-lived phase of being like, oh, this is pretty tasty. And then I'm like,
oh,
okay.
Oh, weird.
I wasn't mixing it with avocado.
True, fair.
I was mixing it with Truvia. And
Truvia is stevia, right?
Yes, but it's also erythritol, I think.
Oh.
It's stevia. It has stevia in it, but I'm not... This is not what Truvia would tell you, but my assessment as someone who knows artificial sweeteners well, just from personal use, my assessment would be that the stevia is actually not the thing that's making it so sweet. I think there's some other sweetener in there.
Oh.
But there for sure is stevia in there too.
Do you not, you can't just go straight stevia personally?
I find it kind of bitter.
Yeah, I hear that. I went through my first coffee phase a couple of years ago, and I was really relying on stevia. But now, not so much. I don't know. I think I got over it and sick of it, which seems to happen often to people.
Can I ask you an Instagram question? Do you spend a lot of time on Instagram?
I feel like I spend... Compared to what I see in other people, I feel like I'm on the lower end of the spectrum, but I do feel like I spend a good amount of time.
Okay. Yeah, I do too. So I was surprised when I searched the hashtag Paris, because I was just wanted to see what would come up.
Yeah.
Tons of boobs and gaping assholes came up. It was, I would say, like at least half of the photos that came, there was a lot of that Eiffel Tower in the peace sign.
Yeah.
Which I posted, by the way. And then a whole bunch of people were like, it looks just like the anarchy sign. Like, stop posting this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, shut the F.
Yeah,
do we,
all languages.
But I was surprised at how much porn came up. And then I thought, well, they must just be using popular hashtags.
Yeah.
And then I searched something else. I can't remember what it was. And then a bunch of porn came up too. And I was like, I had no idea how, like, I wonder if at the Instagram headquarters, they are like, we have a problem with all the porn.
I've never come across that, but I do feel like hashtag Paris is so, like, you could get really whatever with that one.
Right.
But it's funny you bring the up searching hashtags, because that's something that's newer to me. But like, when you find the right hashtag that you're interested in, and there's just so much out there, mm-hmm. that is a great wormhole to be in.
It really is.
I wish I could remember some of my recent ones. Maybe they'll pop up if I look at them.
I'm going to look too. Mine are a lot of dog stuff usually.
Like puppies swimming or something like that mm-hmm. could really fill up a day.
I just watched this video. I forget who posted it. It was after the Paris attacks.
Was it Jezebel?
Yes. It was like, the world's awful. You watch this. And
yes.
It was like 12 little retrievers. White. Yes.
Yes. Oh my God. I watched it with my mom, and we were just like giggling and going like repeatedly making those noises that girls make. It was so great. There was just like 12 little puppies taking turns swimming and they kept saying puppy, puppy.
It was
so wonderful.
Is this you who texted me and said, hey, are we still good for today?
Yes, that was me. I texted you the second you walked in.
Because I was about to be like, uh-oh, text from a number I don't recognize, wondering if we're good for today. What am I not doing?
That's so stressful.
Okay, I'm glad.
I wanted to ask you about, I saw on Instagram that you're doing IVF.
Yes, I am.
How is that going? What's happening?
Okay. It's going. It's good. I've now done 5 egg retrievals, which is a lot. And we have 5 embryos. So for people who don't know, and I was someone who didn't really understand how all of this works, I remember my gynecologist said to me, when you're ready to get pregnant, try for 6 months. Try naturally for 6 months. And if it doesn't work, go to a reproductive endocrinologist. You'll give them a lot of money and they'll get you pregnant. So I thought, like, it's just as simple as that. And everyone can do IVF. And I didn't realize that there are people who are called poor responders. And what that means is that they, even though you're injecting yourself with tons of drugs, which are supposed to stimulate your ovaries to produce a bunch of eggs, you won't produce, I don't know what the average is. The last retrieval, I overheard the woman in the bed next to me say she got 20 eggs. I got 2. So I'm just, for whatever reason, not producing as many eggs, as would be expected. So what that means is we do this thing called minimal stimulation IVF, which is a different protocol. It's fewer drugs. And then we do it a bunch of times till they get enough eggs, and then they'll try to transfer them and we'll see if I can get pregnant. And I'm hopeful, but also I definitely am keeping in mind that there's no guarantee here and no sure thing. Actually, on the episode of my podcast that comes out on Thursday, which will probably be before this comes out.
Yeah, right before. Okay.
So on a recent episode of my podcast, I just talked about something that I don't know that I ever really talked about before. I'm very open about the fact that I'm going through IVF and open about the fact that I, you know, my husband and I are trying to have a baby.
Which is really cool. I just want to say, by the way, because that's something that I've heard about a bunch, but have never really gotten like a firsthand account and don't understand it. So I think it's really cool.
It's kind of crazy the response that I get from it. I get so many women writing in and thanking me and saying how much it helps them. And even guys writing in and saying that like they understand the process a lot more. They never really realized how it worked. I didn't realize how it worked. I mean, the first couple times I did it, I didn't really have a sense of now I'm giving myself this shot for, and it's supposed to do this, or now, like, I just, the whole thing was very confusing and murky. And I was just like listening to what they like, okay, now I do this, now I do this. But I didn't really get that these particular drugs are supposed to stimulate more eggs, and these ones do this, and this suppresses this. And it's a whole thing. But oftentimes I think, why did I wait so long to try to get pregnant? Why didn't I listen? You know, it's not like it's news to me that as you get older, your fertility drops off. But why did I not pay attention to people who said that stuff? Why did I not freeze my eggs? So I just went into some of the stuff that I wish someone had said to me on my podcast, just like in case anyone out there is listening. But I think that for me, I just really... anytime I heard that, oh, your fertility drops off and you really need to focus on that, it just felt like pressure. It felt like people, like, when are you going to get married? When are you going to have a kid and all that stuff? And I've always felt like that stuff just kind of has its own timetable and it happens on its own. And I want to let everything be organic because I feel like the alternative doesn't really work. I feel like if you're like, I got to get married and I need to have a baby, that's just going to push people away. That's always been my sense.
Yeah.
Like for me, I met my husband, and it's so cliche to say, but it truly was at a time in my life where I wasn't looking and I was really fine and happy being single. And I feel like that's when I was finally ready. So I guess I sort of applied that same mindset to having a baby. Like when, you know, my not being desperate to make it happen will allow it to happen. But I do wish that I had maybe listened to the people that, well, no one said to me, hey, you should freeze your eggs. But I knew that it was an option.
Well, okay, I want to cut you off right there because I just watched this like half hour little internet video. Have you heard of Broadly? It's B-O-B-R. It's Broad with L-Y at like the end.
A woman's destination. For, maybe I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's a like women's site from Vice. And they made this short that I watched about freezing your eggs. And it was, I highly recommend women watch it. It was really interesting. And basically they go on about how like freezing your eggs in some ways, you know, they tell like all sides of this, the story, but it's kind of like a business and it doesn't always work. And they're kind of made the point that people will say, freeze your eggs, but people don't understand that just because you freeze your eggs doesn't mean that you will get pregnant.
Right.
There's like, I wish I had specific numbers, but it's like not, I don't know, maybe it's like, it only works 50% of the time. I don't know what that is, but something like that.
That's kind of the wake-up call for me about this whole thing, is that I had no idea how much IVF is not a sure thing. Mm. I don't know why I thought it was. You know, I think it's because so many women don't talk about it.
Yeah.
That's been the...
Oh, because there's like people are embarrassed or something.
Right. So many women I know have actually confessed to me, oh, I did IUI, which is a thing that you do oftentimes before IVF. It's intrauterine insemination. It's a much less intense thing, but it is assisted reproduction technique. You know, I did IUI or I did IVF and I didn't even tell my own mom. Like there's so many people, they just... I don't know if there's shame or if it's because they feel like it's private, whatever it is, they are not open about it. So many, I think if you think of all the people you know that have had babies, I guarantee you more than you're aware sought treatment. And like the waiting room is practically standing room only. I've seen a lot of celebrities come in and out of there.
Well, I was going to say, like, I remember when I was younger and like hearing my mom be like, she said she didn't do IVF, but I know she did. And it's just like a thing, like, why are we hiding this? It should be talked about so people know more about it. And I mean, yeah, I feel like I would see someone on Instagram saying like freezing my eggs. And I'm like, oh, that's smart. Like then they'll definitely get to have kids later, but that's not true.
Mm-hmm. No, it's what it is really good for is a situation like the one I'm in now where they're having trouble getting eggs from me. So it's not impossible, but whereas most women would have produced like a buttload of eggs by now, I'm still like each cycle, it's like here. Well, one cycle I had 5, which was amazing for me. For another woman would be crying because that's not very much. But for me, it was amazing. But of those, only 2 of them fertilized, which still is good that we even have embryos at all. Because it wasn't clear that that was going to happen at the beginning. But
so
if I had frozen my eggs, then now it wouldn't be this thing of like every month, or sometimes I have to take a month off and it's very expensive. If I had just done it, I mean, no matter what, it's expensive. So freezing my eggs would have been expensive, but it's like we would have had a bunch ideally to use, and then I wouldn't have to be doing this now. For me, so I have endometriosis.
Which, okay. I saw that you had tweeted about it to Lena and Jenny.
Because they did an issue of Lena about it.
Which I'm like, I need to go back and read that. Side note, I was going to say, while you were talking about IVF, maybe you should consider writing something about IVF for Lenny.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, I feel like that's the thing that needs to happen.
Okay.
So you have, okay, endometriosis. I've been told that I might have it randomly by Jamie King at like a juice bar.
She probably knows.
I looked into her eyes. I felt she was telling the truth. And then she told me to email her to follow up, and she never responded to the email. Mm. And I just kind of like left it at that. But I know that in Lenny letter, they just talked about it, but I'm curious, like your
experience.
Yeah.
I
don't know if I have it. I just know that, and I'm sorry to the young men who are like, Esther, we're waiting for Word Adults in here. It's like all women stuff, whatever. Who cares? But this is kind of, I don't know, it's not even that personal, whatever. But my last month's period was so bad. Like, I had a wedding to go to. I like waited till the final hour to go to it. I basically was just in bed crying all day.
Cramps?
Yes. Horrible. Like usually I could take like an Advil or something. Did not work at all. I mean, maybe like 12 hours of just pure misery and pain. And that has happened to me. It doesn't happen every time, but it happens like some of the times. Like I remember when I was 15 and I had cramps for the first time, maybe it was 13 or 14 or whatever, and I ripped all of the posters on my wall of men. I ripped them all down because I was like, you don't have to feel this, and I just like went on this crazy rampage. But anyway, so
are your periods heavy?
I don't know. Not, it doesn't seem like they're crazy, but I don't know.
So I've had bad cramps from the very beginning, and I just like, that's kind of my whole thing with endometriosis has been just, and they talk about this in Lenny letter too, just thinking, oh, this is just what it's like to have your period.
Yeah.
And it's only much after the fact where I'm like, why did it take so long for anyone to realize what was going on?
Oh, you're really freaking me out.
Well, the good news is it's definitely not life-threatening.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very common condition.
Yeah.
And so for people who are listening, and for the guys who are shutting this off, endometriosis is when your uterine tissue grows outside of the uterus. But it's a very common condition. So yeah, I've had very painful periods from the beginning. My mom, who does not have endometriosis, also had bad cramps, and I just figured this is just what it's like to have your period. I remember one of my roommates when I was in my early 20s said to me, you should go on the birth control pill because one day a month you can't really get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not normal. And I was like, well, I had been on the birth control pill when I was 20, and I just have never liked it. I feel like it makes me fat and I get headaches. Same. And I just hated it. So I did not stay on it for very long. But the birth control pill is something that they give you usually if you have painful periods. But I was like, I'd rather have my, you know, afternoon of lying in bed, holding my stomach and feeling very crampy.
So it was only one day for you too?
No, it was more than that. But I guess it was one day that she noticed that I would just kind of like curl up on my bed. But definitely more than one day of feeling crampy. Like the feeling of cramps would start a few days before my period and then last through the whole period. And then I had a pain, like a kind of internal pain that freaked me out. And I went to my doctor and she said, let's do a pelvic ultrasound just to be sure. And when they did the ultrasound, and this was like 5 years ago, so this is now recent. When they did the ultrasound, they said, do you have a history of endometriosis? And I said, no, not that I know of. But anyway, it turned out that they saw masses on my ovaries and they suspected endometriosis. But when they see something in there, they have to rule out cancer. So that was kind of scary because I had to sign all this paperwork saying that. So anyway, they said that I had to have surgery to remove the cysts and whatever else they find in there. But the paperwork that I signed is like, but if, you know, I also might wake up without a uterus and without everything, because if they go in and they find that it's cancer, they might have to just take out everything. So that was a really, that was a weird, scary position to be in, especially because I was also like deathly afraid of general anesthesia. I'd never had surgery.
I fully understand. I saw one episode of 2020 where they accidentally put down the wrong dog. And ever since then,
oh my God.
I'm like, I'm going to be put down. Like, it's very frightening.
Control. Yeah.
Yeah.
So very afraid of that. And on top of it, like, and I don't know what I'm going to wake, what's going to happen when I wake up. But when I woke up, luckily found no cancer, but it was endometriosis. So they removed some cysts on my ovaries and removed some other endometriosis lesions. What I did not, and then they recommended that I get on birth control pills to suppress the endometriosis. So I did it for 3 months, was miserable, depressed, like, but more, it wasn't just that I felt depressed. It was like, I felt numb. Like I couldn't connect with joy or with sadness.
The birth control pill makes me not want sex, which is like its own birth control, right. Which is weird. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's totally how it makes me too. Just, I don't, I'm just barely there and fat. So,
yes.
In retrospect though, some of that maybe was a reaction to the surgery and everything I had been through. But I talked to my doctor and she's like, your quality of life is more important. Like if you can't stand being on the birth control pill, just, because it's not a guarantee.
Right.
So I wasn't on the birth control pill for a while. And then now that I'm doing all the fertility stuff, I've come to find out that that particular surgery I had where they remove cysts is famous for messing with fertility because they remove some of my ovary and a bunch of eggs. So that's most likely why I'm not producing the eggs at this time, is because I just don't, like, they took a bunch of them out when they did the surgery. And also she said that the thinking has really changed a lot in the last 5 years. So now they don't feel that it's so vital to remove the cysts.
So if you have endometriosis, do you need to get a surgery or...
I don't know, because what my fertility doctor says makes me think that no, they don't feel that it's vital to remove cysts. But at the time what they told me, so when you have sort of advanced endometriosis, you get what are called endometriomas, which are cysts, or I think the earlier stages of endometriosis, you don't have that. You just have lesions. You don't actually have the cysts on your ovaries, but at the time they told me I had to have the surgery, one, to rule out cancer. So that would, like, no matter what, they're going in to look around. And two, because otherwise the cysts could destroy my ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know now if they still, I mean, the cancer thing would still be like, they, no matter what, I'm sure they would have gone in and looked around. I don't know whether now they would have removed the cysts or not.
Well, I'm not
clear on that.
Ovarian cancer is a very serious cancer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what they were looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think, or I don't know necessarily ovarian. It could have been like other cancers too.
Just like a cancer chilling in the area.
anything that was causing these growths.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although the chances of that were very, very small. Like they were pretty sure it was going to be endometriosis.
Which is
what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just didn't realize that endometriosis is such a big cause of infertility.
Oh, yeah, that's, I didn't even, that's weird.
It is. So once I was diagnosed, I wish even at that point I had been like, because at that point I was already with the Daniel, who's now my husband. Although we'd only been dating for a few months, which was, it was very intense for him, for all that to be happening. Like, we've been dating a few months.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember sitting on his couch and I start crying. I'm like, but I don't know if I can even have kids.
That is so much, like, you're so vulnerable and things are still kind of embarrassing.
Yes.
When you're still with someone that, like, or you've only been together that long.
Right. So I sort of wish that I had been a little more proactive at that point and thought, okay, you know, it might be hard for me to get pregnant. I'm going to try to do what I can now to maximize my chances. As opposed to what I did was I was just like, it'll all work out.
Well,
and I don't know why I had that thought.
Are you clear from endometriosis now?
No. It's all over, according to my doctor. Like, when she does ultrasounds, she sees fluid in my abdomen. And like the endometriosis is, it's back.
And so how does that affect you? The really bad cramps?
I still have pretty, so what happened, this, we're getting so into lady talk.
I know.
I think that's okay.
The name of this episode, right, is definitely going to be like women only.
I know. Last time it was dog lovers only. So I started having really heavy periods. Like, so heavy that I remember I was in New York auditioning for this pilot, which didn't go. Now, when I don't get something and then I find out it never happened, I'm like, oh, good. Do you have that sort of evil thought too?
I don't know if I ever, like, even think about the thing that I auditioned for, like, a day after.
Really? That's the best way to be. That's,
yeah,
how you're supposed to be.
I think it's because I auditioned for stuff when I was, like, 11, and they really drilled into your head, like, you go in thinking it's yours and you leave never thinking about it again. And I feel like I'm still, there's like maybe one or two exceptions here or there, but usually I just like don't even, like, I could see the commercials and see the TV shows and I'm just like, oh yeah, maybe I did. I just don't care anymore. But that is, I totally understand why you'd be happy that it didn't happen.
Yeah. I always feel a little bit petty though when I have that feeling. But so anyway, but it was cool. They flew me to New York and I had an on-camera audition.
Oh, if you were flown out, I understand why you were pissed.
Well, I was down. It was like between me and a few other people, so I really felt like I could almost taste it. Like, I felt, mm-hmm, like this one's mine. I think this one might be mine.
No, that I for sure relate to. Like, mm-hmm, if you feel like you're about to, yeah, that's, then I get really mad and now I can't enjoy certain movie franchises.
You'll have to tell me which ones after. So thankfully though, made it through the audition, and then I was getting lunch with my sister and her husband, and I felt pretty crampy, but just it wasn't like thinking anything of it, and stood up and it was just like, oh no. Oh no. And we were going, and I was going straight from there to the airport. I was like, oh shit, waddled to the bathroom, tried to clean myself up as much as I could.
What, are you saying like you stood up and you're covered in blood?
Covered in blood is too strong, but I was definitely like a lot of blood was happening. So then I remember it was so gross. And I felt so embarrassed and also physically uncomfortable because I had such bad cramps and I was like wet and it was just a little,
yeah.
So I remember, thankfully, I had a little bit of time before I had to go to the airport. So my sister and her husband were great. He handled the bill because we were finishing lunch. And then my sister came with me and we went to Rite Aid and bought like a bunch of wet naps or baby wipes and like a whole array of tampons and pads, which I hate, by the way. And then we went into a public restroom. And I think he stood outside the door because it wouldn't close all the way. It wouldn't lock. Ugh. And I tried to clean myself up as best I could. And then I flew home. But that had sort of thing. I think maybe that was like the first one where I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, my period has just escalated. And, you know, during my heavy flow days, if I had to be in a car for an hour, I was like, I'm not going to make it all the way. And that, even that, I was just like, this sucks. And I remember I talked about it because it was so embarrassing. And people wrote in and they're like, yeah, that happens as you get older. Your periods just get heavier. So I just assumed that's what it was.
What?
And I also always, sorry, lady talk, always had clots. Do you have clots?
Sure.
Okay. But like big ones.
I don't know what we're
calling big.
Yeah.
Like at least quarter size.
I don't think I've seen that.
Okay. Yeah. So that was just normal. That and like when I have a heavy flow, I need to be near a bathroom because I'm going to need to change my tampon like every hour, basically. And that went on for a while. And then when we saw the fertility doctor, he started asking questions. He's like, I'm pretty sure you have fibroids or polyps. That's what's causing the heavy flow. So one of the first things they did was, it's called an operative hysteroscopy, where they put a camera inside your uterus that also has like a cutting tool, basically. And then they can remove anything they see. And it turned out that what he thought were fibroids were polyps. And the hope was after doing that, I would be able to get pregnant, but mm-hmm. I wasn't. But the good news is after that, my period became pretty light and normal. And
oh,
now I'm
cool.
Like, yeah, now I just have normal, what I think is a normal period.
Yeah. Cause that does not sound normal, what
right.
you were going through.
But I thought it was. That's the crazy thing. So much of endometriosis, I think, is you just tell yourself that whatever you're dealing with is normal, and it just, you know, it sucks to be a woman for
yeah.
a week every month. But the weird thing is that now I get my period about every 21 days or no, not 21, like 24 or 25 days. And it's supposed to be every 28 days.
Mm.
So my cycles have gotten shorter, but that's not a huge problem.
Yeah. I feel like all cycles are different. I don't mm-hmm. know. Like 28 is just average. I think mine's like 32.
Oh, really?
So mine's
so you're
like,
lucky.
mine's always like 3 days late. So I just like still, like I never get used to that. Uh-huh. I'm always like, it's late. It's, yeah, I don't know.
Do you ever track it?
I do. Like I have a note in my phone that tells, like I always try to write down what day I get it. But it's never, I don't know. I'm never right. Like, I don't know. So it's not always, it's like between 30 and 34 days or something usually.
Right.
Do you track yours and like know when it's coming?
No. No. And I was always surprised when I would get my period and my mom was always saying, why don't you write it down? Like, why don't you track it? Why don't you write it down? And I'm like, I don't know. I've had my period for so many years and I've never done that. And then I started doing it with all the trying to get pregnant stuff.
Yeah.
And I was very wrong about what day I ovulate as well. I assumed that I ovulated. Usually you ovulate 14 days before your next period. So
right.
Since my cycles were short, I assumed I was ovulating pretty early on. It turns out that I ovulate kind of late. And then I have a what's called a short luteal phase. Please don't stop listening.
Wait, this is also leading to like more women questions.
I know.
Which are sort of not for dinner time. But when you're ovulating, mm-hmm. can't you tell based on like what's happening downstairs?
Are you talking about like a mucus type thing? A cervical mucus situation?
Which this is like so TMI, but whenever I have that, I like... This is super gross, but I'll like put my finger in it and rub it on my guy friends and be like,
oh my God, that is gross. But I love that.
Anyway, is that...
And what do you say when you do that?
I'll just be like, this is from my vagina. I don't know.
And not just your boyfriend, but your guy friends.
Well, yeah.
How do they feel?
They think it's really funny. Like I remember doing it like years ago to my friend Matt Edgar, who's a comedian, and him just being like, Esther, I will never forget that you just did that. That is so disgusting.
But of all the kind of mucus you could rub on someone, I feel
right?
like that particular, that what you're talking about, which is they describe it as like, excuse me, the consistency of egg white.
It's so pure. I
yeah.
feel.
It's really less disgusting than so many other kinds of
yes.
vaginal discharge.
It feels like the only type of mucus that you're, it's socially acceptable to rub on a stranger.
It really is.
But am I right that that's like ovulation juice?
That's what I've read. Yes. That's my understanding of it. I don't know. For me, I've never felt like that's 100% a way for me to know. But so they have these things called ovulation predictor kits. It's like
yes,
a stick.
I'm
that
familiar.
You are. Okay. So I use those, and even those I feel like aren't really exact. But I'm a unique case where I feel like everything's sort of irregular with me. But for most people, I think that if you feel confident rubbing your mucus on your guy friend, that means you're probably ovulating.
That's like my tracker. Yeah. My sister's sister, I share the same mom with my sister, and she's a sister who shares the same dad with. And I saw her a couple months ago, and she's kind of like this hippie lady. And she was telling me that she teaches a class on how to have sex and have no protection, not even pulling out, and not get pregnant, because if you by not doing it when you're ovulating, which I'm like, that's sounds risky.
It does,
but apparently it's a real thing.
Right.
Yeah,
I think isn't that the rhythm method?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't know the name of it. I just explained in a really stupid way.
So the funny thing is, growing up, I feel like I really, really soaked up the messages of sex education and the safe sex movement and just say no. Mm-hmm. But I took it in too much. A little bit of fear mongering went a long way with me. So I was under the impression that basically anytime you have sex, you're probably going to get pregnant.
Right.
And any, you know,
I think that's normal.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
Any time of the month you can get pregnant.
Totally.
Also,
pre-cum will get you pregnant.
Yes.
Which is
I've taken the morning after pill based just on my fear that pre-cum may have been somewhere near my nether regions. And in retrospect, I don't know that I ever could have gotten pregnant. I had no idea that the window for when you can get pregnant is just so, each month is so small. Now, maybe for teenagers, it's a little bit different.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, because I always think about that. It's so weird. If that's true, then why do teenagers and young people, why are there so many accidental pregnancies?
Right.
If that's really true, that there's a day where you can, I don't know. But I guess enough people are having sex that the odds will work out. I don't know.
I mean, does your sister's sister only recommend this method to people who are of a certain age?
That
I
don't
know.
I wonder
if she'd say it works for teenagers.
Yeah, I have no idea, but she just was very confident. And because I was I even said you guys blow a load in you without protection. She's like, yeah, there's no way I can get pregnant if I'm not ovulating.
Right. That is true. As long as you're but sperm can live inside you for 5 days. So you just got to really make sure.
Oh.
That's what I think.
Well, then there's the other thing where guys or people would always say, when I was younger, you can't get pregnant on your period, but then people are always the fear mongers are you can get pregnant anytime.
Exactly.
So you're even, I don't know.
Yeah. Because it depends what day you ovulate. So you can ovulate me really close to my period.
I can't get
pregnant even when I don't have my period also. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just so confusing, and I guess it's not the easiest thing to make sense of, but.
Right.
I don't know. Were you guys using birth control before your 6 months of trying, or were you lightly trying before that?
No, we were using birth control.
Okay.
And that's another thing I regret. It's I knew very early on that Daniel was the guy that I wanted to have kids with and
yeah.
that was going to, end up marrying. And I'm not this crazy traditional person, so I don't know why I waited until 2 months before our wedding when I knew I wouldn't show in pictures. In retrospect, we should have been trying a lot sooner, but I don't think I was ready. I'm just such a late bloomer in life.
Yeah, I don't think you should be so hard on yourself about that. I mean, I don't know. There's something said about waiting until you're ready. That's smart. And you're thinking your life through. I don't think anyone would judge you except the old nanas who are you should get pregnant.
Right.
I definitely relate to that. I don't want to have a baby too soon.
Right.
That's its own huge issue.
And also, my biological clock has really only recently started to tick in any discernible way. And I think at this point it's because I'm so emotionally and financially invested in the process that I'm we got to get a baby by the end of this. It just has to work.
When you say biological clock, do you just mean desire for?
Yes.
Okay. I see.
I've always known that I wanted to have kids. But I haven't felt like the time was right and I haven't felt ready.
Yeah.
But then, you know, plenty of my friends got accidentally pregnant years ago and like now they have teenagers. And I don't think that they regret it in any way.
I don't think that anyone who gets pregnant and has it, like, I think usually you love your kid and you're like, this is great. But I don't think that means that that's what you should try
for. Yeah. Right?
I think you just kind of adjust to whatever your circumstances are. But I don't know. Yeah. It's definitely like a weird topic. Like, you don't know what's right. Or I don't know. I'm not someone who always felt like I wanted kids. Like, for me, it's like less clear of an answer. But I don't know. It's just so confusing because also, like, another thing, like, there are people who have babies when they're like 45. Like, it's not so easy to say, like, I gotta do it when I'm 22. I don't know.
Well, right. My friend Greg is on. So my show comes out Mondays and Thursdays. And Thursday, there's a group of us. And my friend Greg on the Thursday show, his mom had his sister when she was like 47. And his mom's mom had his mom. I said mom a lot in that sentence. When she was, like one was 45 and one was 47 and it was natural. And I think a surprise. So yeah, you hear those stories.
But I guess that's a good thing to think about. Like just because it happens to one person, whatever.
Right. I just feel like I heard those stories and I was like, it'll be fine. And I kind of wish I had played the odds a little bit more and thought, well, and also another thing is I had heard that like, you know, you only need a tiny bit of an ovary, which is true. There are people who've gotten pregnant who only have a little bit of an ovary, but it's better to have all of both of them.
Right.
It will improve your chances.
Right.
So I think that I just was, I don't think I'm a real Pollyanna-ish kind of person, but
what does that mean?
Like a eternal optimist.
Oh.
I've only seen the positive. But when it came to this, I just refused to stress about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like plenty of stuff I stress about, but I wasn't going to stress about this. So,
well, also, I'm sure you know, just because you're having a hard time with it now doesn't mean that the end won't be
right.
What you want. It's just
taking
you're dealing with something pretty annoying.
Yeah. Although there is one aspect of it that I enjoy, which is before the retrievals, they give you a drug called Versed. So have you ever had general anesthesia?
You mean you go, they put you out and they operate on you?
Yes, but they give you a drug to sedate you before they give you the drug that knocks you out.
Yes, I think I have had that. My experience with surgery is like they put something in you and you have like 5 seconds of like, wee, and then it's over. Not even 5 seconds, maybe like
right.
A second.
Yeah. The first time I had surgery, which was when they removed the cyst, they told me that they're like, we're going to give you a cocktail. I was like, great. But I felt like very wide awake when they rolled me into the OR.
What?
And yeah, like it didn't, I don't know what, if they didn't give me enough, I don't know what it was, but I felt like it was like someone just like turned off a light when I went out, like out and then back on. But when I had when they removed the polyps, they gave me Versed. Cause I talked to the anesthesiologist ahead of time and I said that I was very wide awake the last time, you know, before.
Was that like horrifying? I don't understand.
No, sorry. I don't mean that I was awake during the surgery at all.
You mean just right before?
Yes. Like I was aware of being rolled into the OR and aware of them putting the mask on my face and like aware of them prepping me for surgery.
Okay.
I didn't feel it. There was no like easing into it. If they gave me something to make me feel relaxed, I didn't feel it.
I see. I do have from one of my surgeries, I remember like being in the operating room and getting the mask, but I don't know if that's normal or not.
Yeah. I usually do remember the mask, but so they give me Versed, which they give everyone usually before surgery, but for whatever reason, like I felt the effects of it every time, except for that first time. And when I had the polyps removed, I remember they gave me the Versed and it was like 3 weeks after Oliver had died. And I had been crying beforehand, just thinking about Oliver. And then, and I was just stressed and, you know, had been like couldn't have anything to eat or drink. So and I was just nervous, but they gave me the Versed. And for the first time since I had gotten the bad news about Oliver, I felt so relaxed and so peaceful and so not happy, but just like nothing bothered me. And it was actually like a gift. It was a gift because it was a reprieve from the sadness I'd been feeling. And I remember I was like thinking of the most upsetting things I could think about as a test. And I was like, nothing is upsetting me. It's sort of like when you have your wisdom teeth out or something.
You're like hitting your jaw.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like mentally, you know, testing my nerves, and it was the best, most relaxed feeling. I was just like melting into the table. It felt so good. And that is the drug that they give me every time before the retrieval. So I get to feel that like, relaxed feeling. So I actually don't really even mind the retrieval, but maybe because I'm like a total drug addict at heart.
Well, also it sounds like you probably don't do drugs, so that's like your big chance.
Yes. Exactly.
Which I would be the same way. I'd be like, oh, I get to do it.
Yeah. So it kind of makes the whole thing worth it. And I'm not really afraid of general anesthesia anymore, which I think is good because I just think in life you have to have it sometimes, so it's better to not be so terrified of it.
That's definitely true. I have a very irrational fear of it. I remember in January when I was in the ER because they thought I had appendicitis, and we were like waiting to find out, and I was just so panicky the thought that I was gonna have to go under. But you're right, like you just have to get over it. It's like I need to forget the 2020 that I saw. Right. Where they accidentally killed whatever. It was
a 2020 thing about accidentally euthanizing the wrong dog.
Yeah.
What it was about? That's awful.
But I don't even know if it was like my mom or me in my own head that was like, this could happen to me when I get, because it was like right before I had a surgery too. No one like had any regard in my childhood, like how things would affect me.
Right.
And that certainly did. Also, my sister, like when we would go on family vacations as the plane would be taking off, she'd just tell me stories about how some planes, they just ignite and explode upon takeoff. So now I have a lifelong fear of flying. Cool. But I will say, similar to what you're saying, when I took my Australia trip a few months ago, it was probably 13 or 14 flights in 2 weeks, and now I do feel much more comfortable with flying.
Yeah,
which is nice and necessary.
When you said that, like, you just have to get over it, what I was thinking is, I don't think that you can like just force yourself to get over something. I think it's just enough experiences that aren't bad with something sort of allows you to not, it doesn't trigger the fear anymore.
Right. Like it earns your trust because you've had it happen safely enough times.
Like I used to be, this makes me sound like a real wimp, but very afraid of having my blood drawn, very afraid of needles. And like I have to have my blood drawn all the time now. And I'm thankfully over that fear. But I used to be afraid I would pass out, and I don't know.
That's
not something that everyone's afraid of, but it really did rattle me.
I was not afraid of those things growing up for a sad reason, which is that I just was excited to get a piece of candy after they happened. So I actually like loved it, which is a problem. I'm wondering, like, you know, when you were a kid, didn't you feel like you got candy as like a treat or reward?
A reward.
This Halloween I went trick or treating with my niece and nephew, and like I actually trick or treated too and got this whole bag of candy. And I was like, okay, mom and dad, I'm gonna leave it at your house. You can give it to the kids when they come over. My dad was like, I don't give kids candy. And I was like, I wonder if that's a new thing. Like,
what does he give them? Nickels or raisins?
No, like not for Halloween, but just like, he was like, they can color and whatever, but like, I'm not gonna give kids candy. That's not good. And
I feel like that's a new way of thinking.
Yeah, I'm wondering if like,
right, it's probably a better way of thinking than like, we're gonna make them associate food with a reward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a horrible person because of like being rewarded with candy and toys. Like, my life is unmanageable because of that upbringing. But yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that's, hopefully the world is becoming a better place, but probably not.
I do think about, you know, if when I have kids, how am I going to raise them with regards to having a healthy relationship with food and their body and dieting and all that, because I just feel like more likely I just bailed on that sentence because the words weren't happening. It wouldn't surprise me if I have a kid who has to battle his or her weight, because I battled my weight my whole life. My husband's mom is very, very svelte now, but apparently she like really has to watch it. And, you know, being overweight definitely runs in my family. So I just feel like it's in the genetics.
Right. Like, what can you do?
Yeah. But I don't want to give my kid a hang up either. So I don't know what the answer is.
I don't either. I hope there's some brilliant book that like yes, is a bestseller and everyone swears by it. I don't know, but I do know that all my friends or cousins or whoever I know that grew up with the like, absolutely not, they're not better off.
No, I think that's worse.
Yeah, I think that, yeah.
Exactly. I think that my parents, so I was a fat kid, and I think that my parents didn't want me to feel like there was anything wrong with me. So they were kind of hands off is not the right word, because they definitely were like, how about tennis camp? How about, you know, like they were trying to encourage me.
Yeah.
And they didn't have a lot of fattening stuff around the house. But they also never said there was anything. Like, I remember a pediatrician apparently when I was like six recommended that I go to fat camp, and my dad didn't want to do that because he didn't want me to think that there was something wrong with me.
Yeah. That sounds traumatizing.
Right. And I think that's the line you have to draw of like, you don't want your kid to get the message that there's something wrong with them. At the same time, it is hard being an overweight kid. But it's also hard to diet when you're... I don't know what the answer is.
Well, I once babysat for this woman in Beverly Hills. She was like everything you think of when you say that, like a real housewife type. And I should say I babysat for a couple families in Beverly Hills, and they're like some of my favorite people that I'm really close to. But when I first moved out here, this woman, she was super skinny, like fake everything. And she had two young kids, like... 3 maybe and 7 or something, and they had candy everywhere in the house, like jars like displayed, and like their pantry was filled with everything. And I remember asking her, like, because she was really this one was so crazy. One of the first times I was babysitting with her, we all went out to eat and the kids were getting ice cream, and she was like, Esther doesn't want any ice cream, she's working on her weight now that she's out in LA. Like, she was crazy. And then I think
you said anything to indicate that?
I don't remember. I'm sure I was I don't know.
I would still be thinking about that.
I know, but I think I like was so desperate for guidance that part of me like liked that she was looking out for me, but it is so extreme and I can't imagine anyone in the right mind saying that to anyone.
Yeah.
But so I remember that was a topic, and so I asked her, well, why do you have all this candy in your house? And she said, which was kind of smart, she was like, if it's around, it's not a big deal, and they're not going to obsess over it. And I felt like that, I mean, I don't know what her kids are like now, but I felt like that there was some truth to that. I don't know.
Right.
Just like have
Although
it.
If you had bowls of candy around all over the place, would it become not a big deal to you?
No. Although I do have a ton of candy in my house right now, and I don't know. Maybe it is. I think I go through phases. Mm-hmm. Doesn't everyone go through phase where you're like, I can't have food in the house anymore? And then you're like, I can and I'm fine. I don't know.
I'm in that first phase, not so much the second. Although actually, yeah, I've come a long way in terms of now there's more things in the house that I don't find tempting. But that was sort of a hard thing for me when I moved in with Daniel, because before that I lived alone. So I was able to be very controlled with like, I don't, you know, this is like the only things that are in the house are things that I'm like on, that are on my diet basically. And then all of a sudden to live with him, and it's like, he wants there to be more in the house than just almond milk and spinach and Trivia.
Oh my gosh.
He actually wants chips and like delicious stuff. So
do you feel like this low carb thing is here to stay for you?
Probably. So another fun aspect of IVF is that with every cycle I gain weight, and then I lose it, and then I gain it, and then I lose it. And although right now I am like probably 5 pounds heavier than I was at the beginning of all of it. I also just finished a cycle, so theoretically I will lose this again. But what happened was I freaked out after one of the cycles because I wasn't yet aware that this is what happens. Like I gain it and then lose it and then gain it and then lose it. So I was just like, I'm losing control of my weight. I'm gaining weight. I hate this. Da, da, da. And I was really like, I have sort of managed my weight for so long. Like I know how to lose weight when I need to. And I know what works for me, but my usual things, which is like really reducing the calories quite a bit, it wasn't working. I was like, I'm barely eating and I'm not losing weight. What is going on? And in retrospect, I think it was where I was with all the hormones at that point, probably. But I got it into my, well, actually got it into my head. That's not quite true. What happened was a friend of mine was going to Weight Watchers, and I had done Weight Watchers in the past and found it helpful. So I went to a couple meetings, and the Weight Watchers leader there was like, you know, well, first of all, she's like, you're the second person who's come in today who's doing IVF. So this happens. But also as we get older, like the way our bodies process things changes, and it's, you know, it's probably carbs. Like that's probably the problem. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to stop eating carbs. And it actually worked and I lost some weight. So it's just been ever since then that I've been like, I'm just going to stick with this.
Right.
Because even though it's not really working sometimes I think like, I have not had anything starchy or, refined or sugar or any sweet or anything like that since June. I should be so much skinnier than I am. Like, I can't believe that I'm not skinny given all that. But what I have to remember is, but I felt like because I was eating carbohydrates, I was gaining weight. Now, granted, this is probably all not true. This probably has so much more to do with the hormones and all of that stuff. But that was just my feeling, was like, it's easier to control when I'm not eating carbohydrates. And also for me, like bread and butter is like my favorite thing at a restaurant, but, or, you know, desserts or any of that stuff that I find so tempting. It's like never enough, really. Like I'm going to have one bread roll with some butter and then I'm going to stop. Like I just want to keep eating it. So it's kind of, in a way, it's like easier to not even mess with any of it.
I totally hear that. I think that's right on. Like the people who have a small square of dark chocolate after dinner every night,
I don't understand that.
That's like not the same species
right
that I come from.
And I would rather have like two giant bars of like disgusting fake low calorie chocolate than one tiny square of real chocolate.
I will say that I fluctuate on that. As of late, I'm like, I don't do the like fake, like for example, have you ever had Quest bars?
Yes.
So I used to like microwave those and eat those like all day. And I don't know how, but I've managed to like change my taste buds to where I had a Quest bar and it was disgusting, like chemically, like I just couldn't handle it.
Quest bars are kind of, this is a controversial statement, but I think they're kind of BS because they bill themselves as being low carb. Mm-hmm. So when I discovered them, I was like, oh my God, I can have these because the net carbs is very low. And like when I tasted it though, I was like, this tastes really sweet and rich and good. And then I started Googling, and this woman who has diabetes tested her blood glucose level after a Quest bar, and it was like, it had totally gone up. So then I'm like, okay, they do they're not being honest about the level of carbohydrates in these bars.
Quest bars really blew up off Instagram. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're such a gatherer. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that I can do the like fake, but I will say, like there are definitely times where I'm like, I would rather have, like in college every day. Oh, here's exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
In college every day, my dinner was Cold Stone Large, which is called Gotta Have It. And every time you order it, they shout Gotta Have It. It's humiliating. Was that, but the Sinless, they used to have Sinless Sweet Cream, which was made with, whatever it is, Sweet and Low or something.
Splenda.
So it was like super low calorie, huge thing of ice cream. And then like, a low calorie, whatever bag of microwave popcorn. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, popcorn is a good bang for your buck. Cause you can eat a lot. True, and it's not yes. whatever. So I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like being a I think they call it being a volume eater. Like one. Yes. A lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a good bargain of, mm-hmm. yeah, for how much you're eating. Yeah. It's really not healthy. And it means you have some holes you're trying to fill, but.
I know. Yeah, I know. That has occurred to me. Like that thing of like, I just want a bottomless bowl of salad.
Even or though chips it's, and salsa.
Yeah. Even though it's that, it's like, that's not a healthy way of eating.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's something that is a continual journey. I'm trying to think if there's any, I want to check because I made a list of stuff I really was excited to ask you about. And I just want to make sure that I hit all of the questions. How is your podcast going?
Good. It is going really well.
Are there any like recent favorite interviews or like a good start off episode of it's new to people?
Ooh, that is a good question. Well, I just had, do you know the musician Matt Nathanson?
I don't.
Okay. He's a musician and he's funny and he's insightful. And I just had him on my show. And it's weird how, like, sometimes I'll do an episode where I'm like, oh, I know this one's going to be something that people really like. With this one, though, it was so off the bat, like, in-depth psychological, emotional rawness that I didn't know, like, I knew that some of my audience for sure would be into it. Cause like my audience really likes that kind of stuff, but I didn't know if it would just be like a little too intense for people who aren't in the mood to hear someone like talking really intensely about, trying to be a better person and about, you know, realizing that like he's had to cut certain people out of his life and just all sorts of like, you know, genuine like struggles and that kind of stuff. But the response has really been overwhelming. Like people have really, really taken to the episode. So, I would probably recommend that one.
Oh, that's cool. I'm very curious to listen.
Check it
to
out.
One.
Yeah. Let me know what you think if you listen. And he actually told a story, speaking of all this stuff that we're talking about, told a story that I can't get out of my head and it like puts tears in my eyes. I guess so he has a daughter. And she's on the like high percentile of height and weight. And I guess, I'm trying to remember like the order of how it all happened. And she's a kid. She's little. I mean, she's young, but tall and heavy for her age, I guess. And people would be picking her up and like, oh, wow, you're heavier. You're getting heavy. And it happened so many times that she came home one day and she said, "Mommy, will you pick me up and pretend I'm light?" Or pick me up and pretend it's easy. I'm like, it just makes me want to cry hearing that.
Oh my gosh. That's so like sweet
heartbreaking.
And cute.
I know.
And sad. Yeah.
So he was talking about with her really trying to send the message that look how strong you are. Like, look how, you know, it, like make her feel good about her body. Like, look, you can kick and you can look all these things that you can do with your body. Cause he really doesn't want her to feel body shame.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was,
it makes really made me sad. In a different, way. It like, speaking of kids saying things that maybe they don't fully understand why or whatever, I have a friend who has I think she's 3 years old and she's the cutest, sweetest little girly girl. And she watches makeup tutorials on YouTube. And he told us that she like do little makeup tutorials for you. And she'll be like, okay, now put a little whatever on your cheeks. And then she'll say, click like below. Which is the absolute funniest, cutest thing I've ever heard of.
That's super cute.
Like, that's something I can't stop thinking about. I just am like, I told him, I'm like, just all I want to do is come over and hang out with her.
Yes.
And just like be girly with this 3-year-old who loves makeup and YouTube.
That's super cute.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm so glad that you came and did my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And that you're being so open about these things that not everyone is brave enough to be open about because I don't know. For whatever reason. But yeah, I'm really grateful. And I hope that all the women in my life listen to this and get educated and I don't know, just get to know you better.
Thank you.
Yeah, it does mean a lot to me because I know it's not easy to share things sometimes. And I rely on people like you sharing this because I will certainly never like go into Google and figure it out on my own. But yeah, so I know that your podcast is on iTunes and all that.
Yes.
And your Twitter is at Allison Rosen. Yes. And same with Instagram. And you're always posting cute pictures of your doggy and you in a hospital bed, which is always cute.
And for now you can go to iTunes.com/AllisonRosen to get to my podcast.
Oh,
I have a
cool.
fancy vanity URL.
Oh my gosh, sweet. All right, well, thank you so much. I always feel like I could talk to you for hours.
Me
and
too.
I hope that you are back on again and we get into another really intense conversation
about periods,
our vaginas.
Yes, and you have to come back on my podcast too.
Yes, I would love to do it and not sound like a crazy person.
I know you think you did. You didn't sound crazy.
I did. It's okay. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Feral Audio.
Want to tell you guys about a really cool thing that Randy and I have been working on, and Dan's been involved in this as well.
Yes, we're building a fort.
We are building a fort.
In some ways, we kind of are.
A comedy fort of sorts.
One of my favorite things that I see on social media is when someone posts a text chain between them and their mom, or mm-hmm. them and a funny friend.
Or two comedians.
Two comedians, and you get to see the interaction back and forth, which is so fun. At times, there are text chains that we are on, the three of us, that the funniest things ever that only the three of us get to see. So we had the idea, along with a couple other people, wouldn't it be great to allow people to be a fly on the wall of these conversations that happen between funny friends of ours and funny people just back and forth? To us, it would be really fun. And so that is sort of the germ of the idea of a special app called Banter. And we want you guys to try it and check it out. All you got to do is sign up for it. It's free. Find it in the App Store. It's called Banter, B-A-N-T-E-R. Get the app. It's free. And we want you guys to check it out and just pick conversations that are between two people. And the conversations play out in real time. And you get to hear it. It's curated, so nobody's going to be embarrassed.
Right.
It's the best stuff. But again, if you have a couple of minutes, you're sitting on the toilet, you're waiting for a train, you're hanging out. So when you want something, because so many times this happens to me where I want
just a quick blast of something
funny.
Something
and Twitter doesn't give it to me. I want to see this conversation happening between two really funny people and just get a laugh. We all need that in our day. So in order to do that, check out Banter and just download the app and let us know what you think about it.